Good morning, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So today we are going to continue our series of conversations on the upcoming U.S. election, though focusing specifically on the prospects for a contested election outcome and what that might mean for markets and investors. Joining me for the conversation today, pleased to welcome Tom McLaughlin, Head of Fixed Income Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, as well as Shane Lieberman, Federal Affairs Manager with the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy. So Tom and Shane, good morning to you both. Welcome back to Top of the Morning and looking forward to our conversation today.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
So I know there's a lot we want to get through today, but Shane, it might be helpful for our listeners if you can begin by providing us with some background on what a contested election outcome means, and then the process for determining a definitive outcome.
Yeah, I mean, from the get-go, a contested outcome means that we're not going to know on election night or the day after who the winner is. You know, when there's contested election, it often leads to legal challenges and recounts that can often take days or weeks to decide who the winner is and have that official. You know, November 3rd is election day. And after that, you know, there'll be processes to make sure that the vote count is accurate and certified usually by the Secretary of State. And then in December, the states will choose their electors, and then a few days later, the electors the Electoral College will vote. This will lead to when the new Congress is sworn in on January 3rd of 2021. A few days later, on January 6th, the Congress will count the electoral votes, and that's when it will become technically official. Who is the new president-elect. So there is a process that actually takes a while. And, you know, while, you know, we hope to know sooner rather than later, it could take till December or so for us to actually know who the winner is.
Now, Shane, as a follow-up in terms of historical precedent, can you share with us some past contested outcomes on both the state and federal level?
Yeah, the most notable on the federal level is probably the 2000 presidential election, Bush versus Gore. And this is a great example, and it was a prolonged legal fight that took several weeks. And you remember, I just a few moments ago said that the Electoral College vote happened in December, and in 2000, the legal fight spanned several weeks, but the Supreme Court, which ultimately ruled in this case, was very cognizant to rule before the Electoral College vote took place so that they could kind of put an end to a lot of the confusion and chaos going around. You know, on more local levels, you see contested elections very frequently. You know, back in, you know, 1994, a congressman from Connecticut won by 21 votes, and that doesn't, you know, you'll have a recount, which often takes a few weeks. And that's just one example. It happens almost every election cycle that an election or two goes to a recount, and it takes a while to actually know who the winner of the race is officially.
Tom McLaughlin, when these circumstances occur, perhaps we can take 2000 as an example. How do markets typically respond to these contested outcomes?
Well, there's an old saying that many of our listeners will be familiar with, that the market hates uncertainty. So as you might expect, the market in 2000 adopted a risk-off posture as the uncertainty of the election results were made plain the day after the election. After initially rallying in London on news that Bush had won on election night, equities subsequently reversed direction on news that the election was going to be contested by the Gore campaign based on the results of Florida being so close. And in the 10 days that followed, equity markets sold off by 5%. And conversely, government securities, U.S. government securities and gold rallied. So clearly there was a sense that we didn't know where this was going, that it was going to take some time. And a lot of institutional investors decided to park cash in a risk-off kind of basis, and that led to rallies in the gold and the government market. The good news is that after about 10 days, when it appeared that it was going to get resolved at some point, either before or after Thanksgiving, the markets calmed down a bit and retraced. So if you had basically stood still from the day before the election until Christmas, you weren't basically, didn't find yourself at a loss. But you had to ride out what was a fairly dynamic environment and one filled with a fair amount of uncertainty, particularly in that first two-week period, which I think is instructive for what we're going to look at in this, potentially anyway, in this election cycle.
So, Shane, what would you say are the prospects for a contested outcome this cycle? And can you provide us with some color in terms of what the polls are pointing to today?
I think the prospects are fair for that to happen again. You know, there is a chance that, you know, Biden or Trump has a very clear win. And we know the winner, you know, Tuesday night, November 3rd, or maybe early Wednesday morning. But, you know, given how many states are fairly close and expected legal challenges because of mail-in voting, and then with mail-in voting, some states like Pennsylvania are not going to start counting those mail-in votes until Election Day. So all this could delay the process and lead to that contested outcome where it does take days or weeks to sort everything out and, you know, have it declared a victor.
You know, and another point to bring up, just to supplement what Shane was saying, is one of the dynamics that we're looking at closely is what used to be called the blue shift and is sometimes now called the red mirage. Based on polling that we've seen so far, Republican voters tend to be a little bit more in favor of in-person voting. Democratic voters tend to be a little bit more in favor of mailed or absentee ballots. And as a consequence, to Shane's point, to the extent that absentee ballots or mail ballots are counted later in the day, you could see a phenomenon where Republican candidates, not just the president, but down ballot as well, come out to early leads. And then over time, after the polls close, you're actually beginning to count those mail ballots, of which there are many this year. And you could see the dynamic of the race again changing over the course overnight and then into the following day.
Now, Tom, should a contested outcome materialize or really any degree of outcome uncertainty, how might that translate to volatility in the markets?
Well, I think we should reasonably expect it to happen. Already the forward VIX curve is suggesting that the volatility is being priced into the market and it is expected by market participants to increase right into Election Day. So it is interesting because right now the government bond market over the course of the last 4 to 6 months has not been particularly volatile. It's actually traded in a fairly narrow range based on monetary policy coming out of the Fed. Well, what the equity market is telling you is that they're anticipating more volatility, you know, effectively for the next three and a half weeks, increasing up until we get to Election Day and then shortly thereafter before it dissipates in January. So to the extent that there are any market indicators suggesting higher volatility, and there are a few, like the VIX, the forward VIX, you're actually seeing an expectation of higher volatility. So it's one of the things that we should just consider and discuss with all of our clients is that it is expected, and it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody if we see it. And, you know, be careful about basically responding in an emotional way to this kind of a circumstance.
So with that in mind, Tom, how should investors go about prepping for and positioning their portfolios ahead of Election Day?
Well, one of the things that's worth doing is obviously to spend time with your financial advisor to talk about a few of the tax proposals that the Biden campaign have proffered already. And some of these conversations should take some time, particularly when it relates to, for example, estate planning. But from a portfolio construction perspective, I think it's important just to basically, if you've adopted a well-constructed portfolio right now, my suggestion is, having had those discussions, having established a portfolio, it's not in your best interest to necessarily make tactical positions based on the news cycle. And, you know, be prepared for the volatility, understand that it's coming, but then just basically ride your way through it because you've seen it coming. And a tactical move based on the news cycle is basically going to, it has a potential to whipsaw you quite a bit. So I would, as long as you've got those conversations down already, and as long as you've established your portfolio construction, I would go ahead and just ride it out. I wouldn't necessarily close your eyes to all this that's going to happen, but go ahead and just and take it in turn as something that you saw coming in advance.
And then, Shane, what should our clients be thinking about in terms of tax planning and preparation ahead of Election Day, being mindful of a potentially new tax environment on the horizon?
Yeah, in the scenario that Biden wins the White House and Democrats take control of the Senate, tax changes are a real possibility that we need to think about. And as Tom rightfully points out, they should be contemplated now, because some of the adjustments you may want to make and prepare for, you know, you want to put the plans in place now because so you can execute it later if the election goes that way. The two big ones off the top of my head are estate taxes and capital gains. You know, putting in an estate tax plan usually takes weeks, not days. So that's something you want to, you know, think about now, get in place so that you can hit execute. As in the scenario where Biden Democrats win, their plan is to lower the exemption level dramatically. Secondly is cap gains. The team Biden would like to almost double the cap gains tax rate on higher income earners. So if that comes to fruition, you know, it may be worth contemplating with your financial advisor. Is it worth taking some capital gains off the table in 2020 when I know the capital gains rate is 20%? So I can not be caught by a potential doubling of that capital gains rate in 2021. I think those are good conversations to have today with your financial advisor and get that plan in place and be ahead of the curve and be ready for any scenario that happens after the election.
Well, Shane and Tom, it was great catching up with you both, and very much appreciate the insights into a contested outcome scenario and the implications that come with that, along with some guidance around portfolio positioning and tax planning heading into Election Day. So great catching up with you both, and thank you again for joining us on the Top of the Morning podcast.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
And again today, we have been joined by both Tom McLaughlin, head of Fixed Income Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, as well as Shane Lieberman, Federal Affairs Manager with the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy. Top of the Morning will be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.